Good morning, everyone. On this Friday, I'm John Hockenberry. I'm with Takeaway Managing Producer Noel King, who's in for Celeste Headlee, who's out for the holidays. And Noel, you know, the very first conversation that we had when you came to this show that wasn't even on the air yet was all about how what you really wanted to do was focus and make sure that we were on the leading edge of changes that you were absolutely convinced were going to be taking place in Sudan.
That's right. I had moved to this show from Sudan. I had been working in Sudan as a journalist for 3 years. And when I first met you, my focus was really on making sure that we covered this upcoming vote, this referendum that's going to decide whether or not Sudan becomes two countries.
Well, let's talk about that for a moment. It is something you're going to hear about a lot early next year. Noel King is going to get her chance to help us understand what's going on in Sudan. The people of that country will get to vote on whether to split into a north and a south, a political sort of decision that reflects a lot of military and civil war and violence between the north and the south that we've also reported on in this country.
And is going to have an enormous ripple effect on the rest of Africa. Imagine in the United States, imagine Canada splitting into two countries, what that would do to the United States.
And they've tried.
And they've
actually tried.
Effort.
Well, joining us to talk about how significant this is, will there really be a rewriting of the colonial map of Africa in this referendum early next year, is Nicholas Kristof, New York Times columnist, joining us from his home. Nick, it's great to have you with us.
Delighted to be on. And I'm impressed that Noel had been a reporter in Sudan.
Yeah, Nick, I actually ran into you briefly at a hotel, the Acropolis Hotel in Khartoum once. Anyway, long story. I'll leave that one alone. Let's talk about what we're looking at today. We've got 3 million Southerners signed up to vote. We've got 96% of them in favor of secession. This sounds like a done deal.
Well, it's certainly looking a lot more like a done deal than it did just a month or so ago. I mean, for a while there, it really looked as if we were on a train track to a collision and to a new war. And I'd say that these days, it looks as if we're really on a track toward a kind of peaceful secession, just with an awful lot of things that can still derail that train. I mean, there are a million things that can go wrong in the next, the next month and then the time after that. But the North, it's really great to see that the North is actually seems to be preparing people in the North for the secession in the South.
Nick, let's step back just a minute and remind our listeners who may not know Sudan's history very well, what would persuade the north of Sudan to allow the entire southern half of the country to decide on their own whether or not they're just going to take off and form their own new country? What happened back in 2005?
Well, there was a peace agreement pushed largely by the U.S. It was really one of the Bush administration's major achievements, I think, in foreign policy that got the North to agree to hold a referendum in the South now that would allow the South to split away from the rest of the country. And I think the North kind of agreed under duress, didn't really expect this referendum would happen, figured out every ways to evade it. But now it is happening, and I think that the North would like to avoid that secession largely because most of the country's oil, about 80%, is in the South. But at this point, it feels under such international scrutiny, and its military has been so weakened by Darfur and other problems that it really doesn't see a lot of alternatives.
Well, Nick Kristof, who's covered the story in Sudan extensively for our partner, the New York Times, he's a columnist for the Times. What happens to the Sudanese government, so discredited by the stories of genocide in Darfur that you've reported on, so discredited politically because of their attempts prior to this Bush initiative to try to hold on to the South and really enslave the South? What happens to that government?
Well, I think there are a lot of people in the North who were really worried about a couple of things. One is the whole country fragmenting, that people in the East, for example, seeing the example of the South and wanting to split off as well, or the same thing in Darfur, which is just getting messier and messier in the last few months. There's also, I think, some possibility, frankly, of a coup d'etat. I mean, the North is very non-transparent. It's very hard to figure out how much support President Bashir has, but it's going to be extremely traumatic for the North to lose the South, particularly because of all the oil that is flowing from there. So it's going to be a shaky time for the North.
Now, the one saving grace here may be, even though all of the oil is in the South still needs the North to refine the oil. Isn't that correct? The South doesn't quite have the infrastructure itself.
That's exactly right, that all the or most of the oil is in the south, but it's essentially got to flow to the north. And that's going to be true at least for the next half dozen years or so. The only way to really get it out is to make it flow through the north. And so there has to be some kind of a deal whereby the north is going to get a good deal of that revenue and to keep the north going.
Now, it sounds great in the abstract, but that those exact kinds of details have bedeviled a political solution in Iraq up until now. If they were to vote in the south to secede, does everybody know where the line is? And we go, oh, great, here's the border.
That's one of the huge problems. And in particular, there is an area with a certain amount of oil in the right in the middle, right on the line, called Abyei. And they were supposed to have a – they were supposed to be part of this referendum on January 9th. And now it looks very unlikely that there will be any voting there because of a dispute about who should be allowed to vote. Essentially, the North sent people in to kind of stack the voting public there. And – I mean, I've told Southerners, you know, that they should just go ahead and just secede and forget about Abyei. And they overwhelmingly have told me no, that for them, Abyei is so important that they would be willing to risk a war to keep to make sure Abyei is part of it.
So that, does that become Sudan's Kashmir?
It certainly is the one of the great flashpoints where things could go wrong, but there are others. There are two areas just north of the line, the Nuba Mountains and the Blue Nile state, and both kind of feel that they are part of the South. They supported the South in the Civil War, but they are going to be part of the North now, and there is a risk that, you know, that they could be casus belli as well.
So, Nicholas Kristof, are you going to be over there covering the election, the referendum?
I'm sort of waiting and watching. You know, it's not clear that January 9th, the referendum date, is actually going to be the key moment. Things could go wrong before then. They could go wrong in the 6 months after, when the new state is supposed to be born. So I'm kind of watching the flights and ready to hop on the next one.
All right. Well, if you do get there on the 9th, you'll run into Noelle King, because she's definitely going to be there for
That's
us.
That's right.
Nicholas Kristof, New York Times columnist. Thanks so much, Nick. So are you excited?
Yeah.
I mean,
no,
you'll get to see this firsthand.
This is going to be the biggest story in 2011, one of
you
them,
think
I,
so?
Predict, I predict.
Will you be able to move easily north to south, or will you be confined to one particular
area?
No,
in fact, I will be confined to the south. The north requires a separate visa. I don't think that I'm going to get that
Interesting.
Visa.
Well, we'll talk about those details later. Thanks so much.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.